Hello, and welcome to the Re-Up Podcast, your re-up on everything pop culture from the minds of 20-somethings. Today is going to be a bit of a light, you know, a bit of a Pepsi Diet. What's another one? A Miller Lite, you know, kind of a smaller Coke Zero, yep, for a podcast, because there's only two of us today, and it's not an interview. So, but Ed is always one of my regulars. Dawson is here.
Yeah, what's up?
And we're going to be talking about a show that he's been telling me to get to watch for a while. I finally picked up because on Netflix, Legend of Korra, recently added to Netflix. Also, I did not forget of our cliffhanger from last episode. We will touch on Star Wars again. But Star Wars, everyone's going to touch on Star Wars. It's going to be there. But I just recently finished, actually, Legend of Korra.
Yes.
And, oh my goodness, I should have watched this show so much sooner.
I swear. Oh, keep going. You go.
All right. So when I originally heard about the show, I was always a big Avatar fan. I used to watch it with my granddad. And when Korra came out, you know, I remember seeing bits and pieces of season one, didn't really like it. Then I heard online season two wasn't that good at all. And then, you know, I was like, okay, this is trash, you know, I'm not gonna watch this. Is I didn't hear about season three and season four. I found out they moved it to only online, a practice Nickelodeon does to actually really good shows now that aren't SpongeBob and Fairly Odd Parents. And that was it. I just dubbed Korra as being the lesser of the two series.
People kind of put Korra in like the bubble with the live action movie.
Right.
Like it was like this is the only thing that's good about Avatar: The Last Airbender is the original show in the after comics. That's the only thing, and that's
how it was for a long time.
And I was kind of like, and I'm gonna admit, like, because when I didn't watch Korra when it first came out. I actually watched Korra, like, I found it, and I watched it, like, soon after when Avatar, like, I literally, like, this is what I was like, so I watched Avatar over again on Netflix, like, the day it came out, and I watched it all, and I was like, you know what, and my sister, she was like, because she watched it when it came out, and she actually, like, she would keep up with it and watch it online, and she was like, I was like, I'm not gonna watch Korra because people say it's bad, and she was like, how are you gonna give an opinion of something that you haven't seen, and I was like, you know what, and I watched it with her, and I really enjoyed it. Like, it was, of course, like, season two, people say that was the bad one. That's when people stopped watching it, is on season two. And that's why people say it's so bad, because season two was actually bad. But season three is, like, it's really good. It's really good storytelling. It's a roller coaster that you just have to experience.
In terms of it being on Netflix, here's the funny thing. A couple months prior, when everyone got super hyped, myself included, when Avatar was released on Netflix, I am like everyone else, the day it came out, I immediately started watching it. But I think it got to maybe about midway through book two that I went, well, I don't, I forgot how much, you know, actual filler the original Avatar had. And
yeah,
I'm not saying filler is bad. It can be done well, and it can be done poorly. Naruto, I'm looking at you. But when you have like a show that's all there on Netflix, and the show I've already seen, I'm like, well, I've already seen all this. I don't want to see it again. Let me jump forward till I get to maybe Toph, or, you know, or a good part,
season
or
two, book two,
or a certain episode. With Korra, I went in fresh face, you know, fresh eyes, never seen it before, and I watched every single episode. Didn't have a lot of filler, didn't really need a lot of filler, and then there's a couple other changes I had to go, different minds that I had to go in watching the show. For example, the very, very first episode.
Spoiler warning for anybody that hadn't seen Korra yet.
True spoiler warning. We're going to talk about this a lot in depth. Again, for a show that has been out for, I think, almost a decade. I think it came out in 2012. And now it's the full and its entirety is on Netflix. We will put a spoiler warning, but at the same time, it's been out a while, guys.
It's been a long while.
And for me, in that camp, I'm going to say, as a we, what have we been doing? You know?
What have we been doing?
Go watch it. But as I was saying, I had to change my whole mindset the very first episode. I kid you not, I watched about 5 minutes of the first episode, paused, and I had to take a deep breath. Because Korra herself as a character is the exact opposite of what we're accustomed to with Aang. And done poorly, that can be always be a bad thing. But they did this right. And I heard this quote. I was watching this review channel. And the one thing you have to go into this show is that with Aang, when he was told he was the Avatar as a child, he ran away. And then the most of the series is a human rising up to become the Avatar and the responsibilities that holds. Now, Korra flips that coin. She's told she's the Avatar from a very early age and takes that and runs with it. So we have Korra being the Avatar, learning to be a better human being and more grounded.
I completely agree with that. Like, I feel like I like the story. I liked Korra's story more than I liked Aang's story.
Yeah.
That's probably like a hot take. This is definitely a hot take. I like Korra's character better than likes Aang's character. This is not saying either of the shows are better than the other one, because I like both of these shows equally, because to me, they're kind of telling just a bigger of the same story, a big groundwork of the same story. And I can't really say one is better than the other, because to me, they both give a different feeling when I watch. They both tell a different type of story when I watch. When I watch Avatar Last Airbender, I kind of feel like I'm going to be watching a show where I'm mostly going to be laughing throughout the show. I'm going to be having a good time watching these characters, with some very serious episodes in it. But when I watch Korra, it's very serious. It's serious stakes.
Stakes are high. Yeah.
The stakes are very high with gags and stuff in between, but it's kind of like the opposite for Avatar Last Airbender. It's a lot of not gags, for lack of a better term, like not gags, but just lack of a better term, gags. But it's a lot of like happy go lucky time and with seriousness in between. But that's just Aang's story. But the thing like that I really liked about Avatar Last Airbender that people kind of like forget, Zuko was a way more interesting character than Aang. And most people kind of forget that Zuko, his episodes were like the best episodes of the whole show.
Yes, they were. And it's funny when some people make the argument, well, oh, just write Korra like Aang. And because, you know, technically they're the same person. Aang is a past life of Korra. That being said, you know, you had some of the older cast, you know, saying, oh, you remind me of Aang in some places because, you know, they're the same life, this is the same person, just in different lives. That's good and all, but sometimes that doesn't work. For example, when Aang will lose control over his emotions. And with that is completely fine because he's a child. Of course that's going to happen. And he's going to be angry. He's going to be upset. He's not going to know how to deal with those emotions. You know, he goes to the Avatar state, which...
He's 12.
It's going to be all-powerful, but it's going to be vulnerable. Korra doesn't have that. She's a teenager, and she's not going to be going around just willy-nilly super pissed at the drop of the hat because more consequences come from that. It's going to seem childish. So they tackle it differently. Now, like, with Avatar State in this show, it's less of a physical power up, and it's dealt more with mental. It's blocked less by, oh, the chi blocked her for when Azula shot him in the back, to Zaheer's psychologically messed her up.
She couldn't go into the Avatar State because she had a mental block. Like, she literally went through PTSD during the show I love, like, this is like beautiful, like it's so cool, like that the villain, because this is another thing where I think Korra did way better than Avatar Last Airbender with the villains. Korra's villains are way more than just villains, because for like Zaire, which is the best villain of any of all Avatar media,
Wait, should we go down by season and save Zaire for a second?
We'll go down by season.
Because Zaire is a lot to unpack, but I don't want to just use it all at once.
Yeah, now, so like
but hold on, we're still gonna focus on the Avatars. I want to make one more point on them. I can't remember everything from the after comics, or they touched on, and they touched to talk about Aang and Zuko, you know, forming Republic City in Korra in the past tense, but there's not a lot of hinting of what else he accomplished as the Avatar. Now, but what we can get, what we can take away from the show itself, as you know, as, I think it was at 12, 13, he's conquered all four elements and ended a 100-year-long war. Pretty big stuff. But in terms of power, one of the things that people, since they didn't really finish the show, overlooked from Korra, which I thought was amazing, is that she started off with a bit of an advantage. You know, she mastered at that point three out of the four elements already, when Aang only had mastered one. But airbending was a struggle in itself for her, because every avatar has its opposite. It's basically the opposite of your personality is going to be the hardest element to master for you. In her case, it was at the time
airbending.
But after she conquers airbending, she does two other key things that shocked me. I thought it was super cool. She learned spirit bending, which is able to harness the power of the spirit world to soothe angry spirits. Though they did talk about spirits in Avatar: The Last Airbender, but it wasn't to the point where Aang could have any control over them. It was kind of, you know, solve the problem, the Scooby-Doo mystery problem of the weekend, and all this spirit is angry because this village destroyed a forge or something like that, and that's how we make the spirit happy. But nah, she literally taps to the spirits and gets them to calm down, so it's called spirit bending. And then she also mastered metal bending. And when she mastered it, I'm thinking to myself, well, shit, Aang traveled with Toph, who is the creator of metal bending. And then they lived out for many odd years forming Republic City in Toph's police task force, who all use metal bending. I'm surprised he didn't pick that up.
Exactly. He picked up the sonar thing with his feet. He didn't pick up metal bending?
True. He also did pick up, you know, the ability to grant or take people's bending away.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Korra, at the end of the first season, learns that too. That's kind of like a cliff note. But she already is, like, super overpowering the past Avatar in terms of skills and abilities. And yet, she, for the past couple years, she's been slept on as, like, super shitty, what the fuck is this show?
The weak Avatar. I don't understand where that came from.
How is she?
Look, the reason why is because when Unalaq, the second villain, clapped all the Avatars out of it, and people like to say that, well, she got rid of all the past Avatars. Well, Aang died in the Avatar state when he got zapped in the back by Azula.
But did he die?
He died with quotation marks.
Yeah, with quotation marks.
Because the only reason why he survived is because Katara had to use the spirit water.
Right. Okay, so side note, I know everyone, when we were all little, watching Avatar: The Last Airbender, they mentioned at the beginning of that book that, you know, if you die in the Avatar state, it's over. It's donezo for all Avatars and for you. And then they ended that season with him getting lightning striked and nothing else. We were all scared because, you know, back then there was no see you next week or catch everything up online at the time. You know, things were still being released on VHS and DVD. We had to wait on hearsay to when, you know, the next season would come out. And they left it for a cliffhanger for a while, saying, you know, we thought Aang was dead. I think it was a good year before they picked up to that last book.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came back with him hair, and everyone was like, whoa, what is this? So that was scary amongst itself, as being, what were we, what, 8, 9?
Young,
yeah. Say young. But back to what we were talking about. So, yeah, Korra is not to be slept on. She is a powerhouse.
Like, really?
We're gonna go.
Ooh, and I still have one more thing, like where people like to say, like, With the thing where you were saying where people wanted, why can't Avatar Korra be like Avatar Aang? And I'm like, well, people were complaining about that when they saw Kyoshi and Roku in the first series, and they were talking about kill the Fire Lord. Like, all of them were saying that. Literally every Avatar before was saying kill Fire Lord Ozai. And people were talking about, why isn't Aang like the other past lives? It's because they aren't really... each Avatar cycle, it's a reincarnation, but you're not going to have the same personality. It's right. Still going to be...
If I remember correctly, Kyoshi tried to stop the Avatar cycle. She lived for over 230 years.
Exactly.
Because she didn't want to give up being the Avatar.
And then literally... And I saw this thing. My sister, I don't know where this theory came from, where it was like the Avatar before... their biggest regret is the biggest regret is what the Avatar before is what the Avatar next the Avatar in the past, his biggest regret is what the next Avatar's personality is going to be like. For example, Kyoshi, I think like her biggest Roku, like his biggest regret I feel like was not running away from the mountain and trying to stay back, trying to save his home.
Wait, and on that, everyone was evacuated.
I know, everyone's evacuated.
He could have survived that.
Exactly. And, like, I feel like that was his biggest regret, because he would have been able, if that wasn't, so then when he got reincarnated as Aang left immediately. Like, and that's another thing, that's Aang's biggest regret, leaving immediately, not being able to help because that ended up ending his whole, all the airbenders. And so that's why Korra is so fireheaded, and she's ready to battle, like, she's ready to throw the ones with anybody.
Well, I thought Aang left because he didn't want the responsibility of being the Avatar and losing his friends. So happened immediately after he left.
I know.
From the shadows came the Fire Nation.
He left, got frozen, and then said, and then the Fire Nation, so let's kill them all.
We're now here. Let's kill them all. That is a good theory. But we're going to move to what we loved about the show now. So we're into season one. Like I said earlier, it kicks off because Korra is this staunch different Avatar. And, you know, it's half the season spent, you know, taking that deep breath, you know, she's not Aang. Give her a chance.
Just give her a chance.
And it's worked. You have this a good supporting cast with, you know, some of the old guard from, like, Aang's children to Toph's children and being role models now. And then her new team Avatar is pretty cool, too. It has a good bunch of supporting cast.
Lane, Mako, Asami.
Asami had no right being that bad when you first meet her.
Bruh, she is too bad.
For no reason. And she went through almost half a team Avatar date, and I'm like, wow, okay. That's another sidetrack. But we'll go to our first baddie for season one. You know, you had Amon. It went from, you know, being, you know, his whole ploy in the season was the Equalist movement, how non-benders were being oppressed by benders because not everyone's born an element bender. So it's a gift. And, you know, non-benders were being mistreated. You know, they wanted uprise, equal for all, but it turned out to be like this really terrorist organization. You know, it started planning attacks, bombing, and everything was getting out of control. And then it turned into much, much more when you found out, you know, Amon was a bender. Not only that, a bloodbender. One of the coolest things we got out of Avatar the previous series.
Where it only showed up twice.
Was it twice or was once?
Yeah, it showed up. So it showed up on the episode where Katara learns it, and then she also used it on the, you remember the revenge episode where she was looking for the guy that killed her mom, and Fire Lord airship and like, and I was like, oh man.
Oh yeah, she that revenge quest episode. I do remember.
Yeah.
And then not only that, they could use it when it wasn't a full moon, It was like, whoa, wait a minute. He's doing all this. And because the lore, the big thing about the season was he was taking people's bending away. A gift only the Avatar before her could do. It was like, but how the hell is he doing this? It turns out late in the season he's using bloodbending to do it. They didn't really touch on how.
But no, you know, they did. He bloodbended away their chi paths away from from them being able to lock into that port of their brain where they can waterbend or firebend or whatever.
Ah, okay. But that was pretty big deal. Also, I did love that, you know, one person, like, can make law depending on how powerful they are. Because they say in the show that when they had a flashback to Aang dealing with Amon's father who could bloodbend, you know, Sokka goes, you know, bloodbending was outlawed by Katara. But she was that powerful waterbender that she just outlawed a whole technique.
No bloodbending because it's too powerful. But one thing I do want to say about bloodbending is I find it like really interesting. I don't know if they did this on purpose, but like when they showed the flashback with Aang, he was being bloodbended. He was getting bodied, and the only reason why he broke out of the bloodbending was because he went to the Avatar state. But when Korra was being bloodbended, the only way that she the way that she broke out of the being bloodbended was airbending.
Well, because here's the thing. Here's my take on that one. Would probably because also I love that scene though, because he's getting bloodbended and he's going, wait a minute, I'm the Avatar. And went to the Avatar. It was almost like, oh yeah, Super Saiyan. Kaboom. But they say in the season one that she's mastered 3 out of 4 elements. She's excelling in the physical portion of being an Avatar, but she's lacking in the spiritual, meaning she doesn't have that spiritual connection that Aang had. Aang was super into the spiritual when he was like going around unlocking, astral projecting, unlocking his chakra, speaking with all his past selves. He had that down pat. So going into the Avatar state, his Avatar state was probably way more powerful than Korra's at that point. But with Korra, when she airbended, Amon had already bloodbended her the chi away for her to fire, earth, and waterbend. That's all that she knew at the time. She couldn't airbend at the time, and that forced her to unlock the other part where she could airbend because he didn't unlock that part away. And then the subplot of his brother and his father, you know, pitting them against each other, forcing them to learn how to bloodbend. And then the surprise at the end I found is when he takes his brother, you know, they escape out of the city. So his brother goes like, you know, this has to end. And he kills them both in that car explosion that looks like something out of Patriot Games.
It was the boat explosion. He put Asami's dad's invention to good use.
Right. He's like, you know, it's time to end this, and behind his back, you know, click that ignite and they both explode. It's like my jaw dropped. I was like, oh shit, they really offed the guy. Like, so that also set a precedent. And then, you know, she gets her bending back at the end of the season. She reconnects with her past avatars. You get the Aang cameo, everyone's happy. And then here comes season 2.
Oh
yikes.
The
proverbial stain on this series, because
this is the reason why people do not like the series at all. Like, this is, I feel like this season is solely the reason why people do not like Legend of Korra.
Absolutely. But it's season, the funny thing is, it could have been great, because
it could have been so
the
great.
Ideas for this season were awesome. The way it happened, awesome. Not so much. Now, the synopsis for season 2 is all about the spirits and the spirit world. So they go back to Korra's home, and, you know, now they introduce her uncle, who is from the Northern Water Tribe. And he's a master of spirits, and this other water tribe is dealing with all, you know, these spirits popping up. They're angry, they're causing a muck, and they need to fix it. But no one knows how. So only he does. So Korra goes with him, and we get to that later, because that was really dumb decision, reason why she did that, but we'll get to that. And what he has her do is, you know, she has to open up two portals, basically the magnetic poles of the world, the portal on the Northern Water Tribe, the top of the earth, and the other side at the southern part of the earth. You reopen them both up, and now there's the super portal that can connect to the both sides of the world and let loose the spirits. We don't know is that her uncle is working for the big bad evil spirit. I think
The embodiment of evil, Unalaq.
The embodiment of evil, Unalaq. Oh, I think what wasn't Unalaq?
Unalaq was her name? I think it's Batu.
It's Batu, yeah. Right? And he's working with her, with him, so he can release him. Again, that sounds cool. But what happened? Little bits in the season where everyone's just making dumb decisions, and all these red flags happened. Where obviously these are bad guys. What are you doing? And just bad writing plagues this season.
It's really like, while the crowd is like, obviously he's evil. Maybe they're gonna do a twist. No, it's literally, you know who the bad guys are, and literally the bad guy works with the literal embodiment of evil and everything that is bad in the world.
And all of that is overshadowed by a bunch of good bits, to where, you know, they talk more about the spirit realm. This season introduces, he just brings back fan favorites. You get this Uncle Iroh back in the spirit world.
Iroh back in this season. You get my girl Janora. My girl Janora finally showing off what she can do.
Right.
Janora's Aang's granddaughter, for those don't know.
Right. And then you also have, you know, more spirit. Korra learns her spirit bending.
They introduce the first ever avatar. They introduce and tell his story.
They do major lore drops that become precedent for the rest of the series. Mm-hmm. And they have really good action sequences. Like, at the end of the season, they have this whole giant, you know, spirit battle. And it was really, really well choreographed. But just the pacing and the obvious red flags of, you know, of evil, and dumb decisions by the main cast. It's like, well, this is no good. Literally, her reason for joining her uncle was, well, he can solve it. He can fix the spirits. I'm not done learning airbending from Tenzin, but they don't want to have anything to do with it. Everyone's controlling me. I feel like I want to make my own decisions. I want to go with my uncle, who's clearly not an evil guy.
Clearly, he's not evil. He's just trying to attack the Southern Water Tribe.
Right. Oh, he moves in Northern Water Tribe battleships into the Southern Water Tribe and starts oppressing the people, but he's only doing it to protect them. It's nothing malicious like that. He's not closing off the ports isn't a bad thing. Like, what?
We have to make sure what are you talking about? Opening up spirit portals to another dimension isn't bad. How is that bad? How? Like, it's just stupid decisions, but
it could have been better.
It could have been done better, but at least it gave us, I think that's a good segue.
It gave us season 3?
Into season 3, the best season.
Oh my goodness.
With season the best three. Villains I hear.
Season 3 had me hooked on, like, I literally had to pause myself halfway through. I said I couldn't watch this in one sitting, but it was so good that, like, a day later, I went back to finish watching it, because it was so good. Dawson, I'm going to let you take the reins on season 3.
Okay, oh my gosh. All right, so season 3 starts off with a bang. So, Bumi, which is Aang's son, his oldest son.
So yes, so to clarify, Aang had three kids with Katara. He had Bumi, Kai, and then Tenzin. Bumi did not
is a non-bender.
Was a non-bender, and he joined the Fire Nation Army, or the Republic Army.
Oh, the Republic Army.
And became a super high-ranking general. Kai was a waterbender, and she just traveled around the world, you know, perfecting her skills and doing, I don't know, what they don't touch on that
else. She healed. She was a healer. Her mom, Katara didn't teach her how to fight, so she just was a good healer.
Right, and then Tenzin was the only airbender. So it was his task. He went around with Aang to rebuild the airbenders, and that was his whole life goal.
Was just learning the airbending ways. Right. Well, we thought he was the only airbender. That's because since the events of season 2 and all the spirit world is open, all the chi paths of the new airbenders are open. And so my boy Bumi gets his airbending.
So basically, Korra, when she opened both the spirit portals and reset all the spirit wilds, it was like the whole world went on reset, because, you know, there has to be balance. In order to be balanced, all four elements have to be present. So, new airbenders.
New airbenders. My boy Bumi finally makes his dad happy. Right, finally makes Aang happy. He's not a disappointed to his father anymore. Mm-hmm. But so this is, we're still going off the effects of season two, because since the chi portals are open, like not chi portals, the spirit realm is open, like spirit vines are all over like the city of the Republic City, and they don't know how to stop it. And since that is happening, Korra, she's hated by everyone because they think it's her fault.
She had approval
everyone
ratings.
Like her.
She had approval ratings, and they were just bomb. Booty. Like you can't give the Avatar approval ratings. That seems unfair.
So her approval rating is going, but she finally has a new thing because new Airbenders are being. So that's her new purpose in life, is opening up and finding the new Airbenders. But little does she know that one of an assassin who was planning on killing her and who was also working for Vatu, he is out in the world, and he was in jail, and now he's an Airbender. He's the coolest Airbender. He tells his story about this Airbender that didn't touch the ground that figured out how to fly and didn't touch the ground for the rest of his life, and then he proceeds to wax these guards with his brand new airbending, and it's the coolest thing ever. So he proceeds to break all his colleagues out, which is a lava bender, which is freaking cool. He then breaks out a water bender with no arms, so she uses her tentacle. She uses water as like tentacles and arms, and she's the coolest water bender I've ever seen. And then a combustion bender, which is, if y'all remember, Sparky's Sparky Sparky Boom Man.
Yes.
It's basically him. So he has the eye, and it boom. And so they go and they're looking for Korra so they can kill her, because they want to get rid of the Avatar state, because the Avatar is a symbol of authority or something like that, and they want a state. And they want a state of anarchy. They don't want any leaders in their new world order. And while this is happening, Korra is going around, and she goes to different. Korra, Tenzin, and the gang, and the Avatar gang are going around, and they're trying to figure out where all the Airbenders are, the new Airbenders are, and they try to find them and bring them back. And so they go to Ban Sing Se. That's where a lot of Airbending things are happening. And they're like, "Where are all the Airbenders?" And the Queen of Ban Sing Se is like, "I don't know where they're at. There's no Airbenders here." But literally, you know, the Dai Li are kidnapping the Airbenders and forcing them to work for the army. So they break them out, and then they take all the Airbenders, and they bring them to the Airbending Nation, to the Air Nomad Nation. They teach them all the ways. Of course, there's problems. My boy Milo has to toughen them up. Milo is another one of Aang's grandsons. One of his grandchildren, his only grandson. No, one of his grandsons. Because he has the little boy. He has the baby. I forgot about the baby.
Right.
But... And so he has to get him into order, because he's the coolest Airbender besides Zaihir. And so while this is happening, they don't know that Zaihir is broken out, but they don't know where he is. They don't know where their posse is. And so they go meet. So they try to check, and they figure out that one of Toph's grandchildren, what's her name? I can't remember her name right now. Opal. One of Toph's grandchildren, Opal, is a Airbender as well. And so they go to Toph's daughter. What's her name again?
Which one?
This Toph's daughter, the youngest one.
Oh, Sue.
Yeah, Sue. They go to Sue Yin. They go to her, which is not canon, but canon, Sokka's daughter. They go to her, and they're like, "We need to get your daughter, and we need to train her." And she's like, "Yeah, of course." And they have a little Sue and the other one. I don't know why I can't remember Toph's daughter's name.
Sue and Lin.
Sue and Lin, they have a little bicker because they had a falling out, but they become sisters again. But then Zaire's posse comes back. They come out of nowhere, and they start trying to kidnap Zora.
He meditates. Korra. He fucking just sits down.
Meditate.
Halfway across the world is like, "Where are we going now?"
But I forgot to mention, while they were worried about why they were trying to find Zaire infiltrated the Air Nation, and he was just learning how to be a better Airbender.
Not even he knew a lot already. He was learning.
He knew a lot.
He really just mucked about, learned a little bit more, taught some people, and then they found him out. I was like, "Okay, I gotta go."
And they found him, and he left. And then he tries to kidnap Korra, but that one was a fluke. So it's like, all right, we need to get out of here. But then Korra goes looking for
him,
a spy. No, she's trying looking for a spy of one of Zaya's people.
Right.
And Zaya ends up killing the spy and taking Korra. And
Before we continue, because this is still a lot to unpack, I want to put so people can to understand why we're kind of like fanboying over why, you know, Zaheer is like the best villain. Zaheer is the villain that he's the bad guy, but he's not a bad guy. To the point of he makes these really philosophical points to like, oh shit, he's kind of right. Like maybe he's not wrong, but how he goes about it is like, okay, he's doing the kind of murderous thing. That's kind of
he kills the Ba Sing Se queen.
Earth Kingdom. So he falls in line. If you ever want an example, he's the Eric Killmonger from the Black Panther or the Thanos. Not Ultron. Ultron was just stupid. But
he's
Thanos.
Killing people.
He's killing people. He's murdering.
But is he wrong though?
But like, you know, everything perfectly balanced. It's all things should be. I looked up here. Listen to this quote. So this is Zaheer talking with Korra in the spirit world. So here goes, you know, you keep the spirit portals open, but why stop there? Bringing the spirits back should only be the beginning. Korra goes, you know, what do you mean? She goes, the idea of having nations, governments, is keeping the human spirit realms and spirit realm separate. You've had to deal with a moronic president and a tyrannical queen. Do you think the world would be better off if leaders like them were eliminated? You know, Korra is shocked. She goes, I don't know what you mean. I can't really disagree with you. You know, I'm the Avatar, you know. But she's, you know, like, but taking out world leaders isn't the answer. Zaheer goes, you know, it wasn't too long ago that the airbenders were all wiped out thanks to the Fire Lord's desire for world dominance. True freedom can only be achieved when the oppressive governments are torn down. But this is, you know, Korra goes, you know, that wouldn't bring balance. That would throw the world into chaos. Zaheer goes, you know, exactly. The natural order is disorder. Do you know who once said that? And then who once said new growth cannot exist without first the destruction of the old? Korra goes, no. And he goes, the wise Guru Lahima, an airbender. And, you know, Air Nomad is supposed to be this peaceful monk race, but they have this monk talking about destruction. Whereas some of this, you know, the natural order is disorder. Kind of making some type of sense. You know, tyrannical governments shouldn't be. People aren't free, but at the same time, you know, you can't go around murdering everybody. That ain't the way.
It's really like it. Zaheer is like, you kind of can't disagree with him. You're like, maybe if like it's like the meme, this like where it's like the this fish walked out of the water and now I gotta pay taxes.
What? I have not seen that one.
It's like that. Like, if we really mess up the natural order, like, but like going back on like the synopsis. So Korra, she gets kidnapped or something, and they try to take her.
They fucking poison her, right?
They take her. This is before they take her first, and then after they take her. The Team Avatar goes to fight him, and the combustion girl ends up dying, which was Zaire's love interest. And so
Wait, hold on, you're missing the key point. So after she gets out, he's like, I'm tired of her going after her. She's got to come to me. He holds the entire Air Nation hostage.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
For her to come to get him.
And she's like, take me. But then she just tries to like beat him up like before. Like, but he ends up getting taken. They kill the combustion woman, and that was Zaire's only love, and that's the only thing that he loved on Earth. And so he grabs Korra and jumps off the mountain, and everyone's like, "Oh my gosh, what is he gonna do?" And he just flies off.
He just sits like. So naturally, everyone's like, "Well, airbenders do that all the time." Like, no. When you're flying as the airbender, you know, you're rotating the wind, you're doing all this other stuff, and you're creating some type of current. Nah, this man is just levitating, floating. He's weightless now. He has nothing else to lose.
The only thing he had is died.
He's just free of all worldly possessions. He went true
He's as light as air. Like, the only way that Airbenders were able to fly is because they had their gliders and they were able to do the wind current and stuff like that. But he just said, gravity, what's that? And took Korra and flew off.
And then, Tenzin, again, Aang's son, who's probably been a master of airbending for a long time, is like, he's like, he did what? Like, that's been an airbender myth, but, like, no one thought to ever put it into practice because it was nonsense.
It's like, you can't, like, it's not, like, it's crazy. So he takes Korra, and then he ties her up and puts her up like this lava pit. And the three people of Zaire's left, they poison Korra. And they're, like, trying to get into the Avatar state so they can kill her in the Avatar state, and the Avatar state is no more. So Korra, she goes in the Avatar state, but breaks free. But the poison is still slowly killing her. Bolin and Mako fight the other two people. And it's just Zaire and Korra. And Korra
also learns lava bending, which I thought was awesome.
Bolin learns lava bending. Korra, she goes, she fights Zaire, but she's still getting waxed a little bit because she's poisoned, of course. Like, she almost wins, but then the poison kicks in and she gets waxed. And so Zaire grabs her and he's like, I'm just gonna fly away from this. And then, but the airbenders use a wind current to pull Korra down. And Zaire's like, I can just get away. But the thing is, No, you can't. The chain that Zaire used to tie her up, she used to tie him up and bring him down the vortex of the airbenders and knocks him out. Ending the season.
Also,
Korra, they pull the poison out of most of the poison out of her. She's in a wheelchair. She's
unable to walk, something like that.
She's unable to walk.
Zaire had did that season, he just expanded on all of, like, a lot of Avatar lore and elemental lore, because the way he killed the leader of the Earth Kingdom. And he was gonna kill Korra, there are different force parts of bending. So you have the core, you know, four elements, and then you have subroots, like for firebenders, the famous electricity. You increase the heat of the surrounding around you, and you have to supercharge it, and you create lightning, and you have to direct it. What I had never seen and never thought of, because, you know, it's a kid's show, but you don't think about this. There's air in everybody. You need air to breathe. So where he killed the Earth Queen is he takes the air out of her.
And she suffocates.
And it's like around her head.
And you watch her suffocate on a kid's show.
And I was like, yo, first of all, I didn't think about that. But the second, like, this is crazy.
It was cool to watch, though, because the queen of Ba Sing Se was kind of a dick, but...
Yeah, she was kind of ass, but... And then he tried to do it to Korra, you know, she bleeps into the Avatar state and says no to that, but at the same time, that is huge. It's funny how that ability like that fell to, like, the air nomads, where, like, you know, there's a quote from Tenzin, and he goes, you know, an air nomad never attacks a defenseless person, you know, they don't attack first. But to have sorts of, like, think about it, like, you know, in Zaheer's group, you know, you had the earthbender, they put him in a wooden boat in the middle of the ocean with no earth, so he couldn't earthbend. The combustion woman, they kept her in below freezing temperatures and in a glacier, so she could there's no heat around. The waterbender,
kept her over a pit of lava. They kept her in a volcano over a pit of lava, and they only gave her water through, like, a little tiny cup, so she wasn't able to bend anything. Right. Like, they had the water in a little cup, so.
But that begs the reason: if you captured a serial killing airbender, how do you can't imprison that? It's air is all around.
They capture Zaire at the end. They show, like, what happened to Zaire, but he just, like, kind of, they just kind of put a chain around his ankle and keep him in a room with a pillow. And he's just in there meditating and floating.
I like to think that they took his bending away.
No, you remember? Because when she walks in there, he's floating.
Oh, that's right.
Like, he's doing literally what the story he's been telling us the whole time. Like, I don't think he's ever going to touch the ground ever again.
So that was the greatness of season 3. Also, our retelling does not do it justice.
It doesn't
do
it justice.
I recommend watching this show, and especially season 3.
I didn't even get into Jinora getting her arrows. I didn't even get to the airbenders saving the flying bison from the poultures.
Also,
I didn't
even her get being into... the youngest airbender to get the arrows.
Exactly.
It was Aang originally, but she beat him by a year.
Beat him by 1 year. And I even talk about how Milo's going to beat him in a few more years, you know. Just give my boy Milo one more year.
Now we get to the final season, season four, which is 3 years after season three, which that took me by surprise. A huge time jump like that. And now, okay, so I thought about this in my head and I haven't gotten out of my head. Season four is literally Legend of Korra's Fire Nation. Because, you know, the vacuum left from the death of the Earth Queen, one of the guards from Su Beifong's city is in charge of unifying the Earth Kingdom. And she basically goes mad with power. She wants everyone to go to bend under her will. And she becomes, you know, that tyrannical military power. And we will take you by force type of girl. And then has all this advanced technology and no one can stop them. And that's basically the super, super, super summed up version of season four. But some key points to note about season four, super fucking, you got your mech, giant 20-story mech, giant spirit cannon, more metal bending, advanced metal bending,
and toss return,
which was everyone was super hyped for that.
And she called him Twinkle Toes. She calls Korra Twinkle Toes, which was really cute to me.
Which was that had everyone by the feels. Oh shit! What else happened in that season four? Season four.
Milo grew hair.
Right. So season four. Season four is probably the only fault that it has was coming after season three.
That's season like four literally
is
fault.
Not bad at all, but season three just pushed it up so far over the top. Anything afterwards felt meh.
Like it just had to fly on the heels of season three. Season four is not bad by any means.
It's not bad, no. They got some budget and did some cool CGI things with the mechs.
But I'm just like season. Three was just so good because it's like it's hard to follow that up.
So,
except
in all our fanboying, watch Legend of Korra.
Legend of Korra, just for how it tackles a lot of things that
diverse,
I don't think
it tackles a lot of mental like PTSD and like overcoming PTSD. Fears. It has a great group of cast.
It gives my girls what they needed, like, in which was a strong character, because Korra is a strong character. Asami is a strong character. My girl Lin, a strong character. Jinora, man, it's just goated.
So I mean, for example, how did your sister like it? Because you know,
my sister, she really liked it. I agree. Like, this is what I think. I liked, I'm going to say that, like, this is a hot take. I think I've said this earlier in the podcast, but I liked Korra's story better than I liked Aang's story. And my sister agrees with me because she's like, it's more of a story. Like, they tell more stories in it, if that makes sense. With Aang, it was kind of, the whole thing was beat the Fire Lord. But for Korra, it had to. It was kind of like a blessing in disguise, for lack of a better term, where they didn't know if each season was going to be the last season, so they kind of wrapped up it at the end. So each season had a different villain, and they got to explore a different theme for each villain.
Mm.
And that's something like my sister brought up to me. She was like, for season one, after each season, there was some consequence that they had to deal, not consequence, but something long lasting that they had to deal with. For season one, it was Korra. There was a new president in Republic City for the nations. Right. For season two, after season two, it was the vines everywhere and the airbenders. For season three, it was the monarch was leaving, for the different nations around. And for season four, Korra cut her hair. Because we didn't get to see, there was no season after that, so I'm just gonna.
True. I feel like,
but it's
feel
still
like if they had a fifth season, I think it would have dealt more with the Fire Nation, because, you know, they kept their Monarch.
Yeah, they it would probably dealt look, more with after, the Fire Nation.
After 100 years, they know how to do a Monarch right now. But that being said, we got to segue over to our other topics, but I want to do some little sidebars of other stuff I found during this week. One thing I noticed actually today, you know, the NBA playoffs are back.
Yes.
And on the one of their news outlets, the Bleacher Report, they did, you know, they did a trailer for the NBA playoffs. You know how they did it? They did it.
How'd they do it?
They remade the intro to Cowboy Bebop, song and all, but for
they
the
did? Playoffs.
Yes, I will have a link to it on the Re-Up Podcast Twitter. You know, follow us at the Re-Up Podcast on Twitter. But they did it, and it caught me off guard. Like, oh shit, this is like so cool. Because I guess, you know, you can be a diehard sports fan and still watch a bunch of anime. But that came out. That was really cool. You know, but also, you know, on Netflix's rival platform, you know, Disney Plus, X-Men have started to come popping up on there because, you know, they bought Fox. But, you know, as we're on Disney Plus, also one of the things they do, you know, how movies are no longer in the theater because due to coronavirus. A movie that was scheduled to release this year that didn't, you remember Mulan? Mulan was scheduled to release, but instead of, you know, just putting it on Disney Plus, they're putting it on Disney Plus, but for $30.
Oh, what? I wasn't going to see it anyway.
So, like, so you can have Disney Plus already, which is already a paid subscription, but pay us $30 more if you want to see this movie.
And the thing is, I wasn't going to see Mulan anyway. There's no
neither
Mushu.
Was I. They took out all the fun parts of that movie.
They took out all the fun parts, and it's not going to be the same story. And I kind of disagree with all of the live-action
remakes.
When they're remaking all the live-action remakes, the only one that I kind of really enjoyed was The Jungle Book, and I kind of enjoyed Aladdin, but the other ones are kind of boring.
Aladdin, the live-action, was just Will Smith featuring
Aladdin. It was, like, exactly. It was,
I have no problem for an hour and a half of Will Smith. Trust me, I'm probably one of a big Will Smith fan, but it wasn't Aladdin. It was just a showreel of Will Smith being Will Smith, and it's funny, but it wasn't Aladdin, and I don't like the egregious live action remakes. And maybe if it was like a Toy Story, maybe I would
not even.
But maybe look, I would consider paying, but I still wouldn't pay. But for Mulan, I'm not even thinking.
Like,
that's
no.
But
that's
on,
a no
on
for
topic,
me,
dog. That's a no for me, dog. While we're on a stupid business, well, not stupid, just egregious business practices by Disney, we're back to what we promised last episode. Even though it's maybe short, not as long as we talked about Corey. We talked about Corey the entire episode. Star Wars.
Copyright.
Just the Star Wars theme and that really shitty recorder. It's out of tune. I said last episode that, you know, maybe what? The 2010 before the new the new trilogy came out. If I said, you know, episode 3 is my favorite, I would have gotten booed out of a room. Everyone like, get this man out of here. But luckily Disney backed me up and made 3 worse movies that everyone hates. But I feel like over the years, Star Wars, maybe it was always a cash grab, but if you watch episodes 4, 5, and 6, the original trilogy, for all their technical plunders, for maybe it looks really bad, it has been edited over a lot, it's not as good as you remember it, it was pretty innovative for its time. No one else did anything like that before. And it's movie history. No matter how bad it is when you look back at it, but especially when you saw it a lot in the early 2000s with the first 2 trilogy, with the prequel trilogy, and then you definitely see it with these last 3, they pander to our audiences so they can make money. Whether it's video games, whether it's action figures, whether it means Happy Meal deals, So they, and then they go, what worked last time? Look at the first three. Well, let's do it again, but with new stuff, kind of different, but still the same. Like, this time, oh, they did the Death Star last time that killed one planet. Let's make a bigger Death Star that kills multiple planets, and they have to go the same middle minor flaw, blow it up from the inside, save the day until the next series. You know, type of formula.
It's formula. Like, there's nothing wrong with formulaic, but there's something wrong with when they do formula, like when it's kind of overdone, like. And when they don't try to change really anything, like, this is what they did. So, I think in The Force Awakens, they tried to change stuff, but they still tried to make it familiar. And The Force Awakens, as you remember, people like The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Like, it was hard to find somebody that just hated The Force Awakens.
I like The Force Awakens, yeah.
Like, it was good. But then the next movie came out, The Last Jedi. And that one, this is what they tried to do. They tried to, like,
look, out of the sky.
We're completely different. Look, watch. And they did the worst mistakes ever. They tried to say, like, because this is what happened. People were predicting stuff. And so what J.J. Abrams' smart idea was what Disney's and J.J. Abrams' smart idea was, let's change the whole movie and let's make it whatever, the opposite of what the fans want.
Right. Everything the fans don't want, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Everyone loves Finn. Let's give him a stupid and non-important side quest and have him repeat the same character arc from the last movie because we can't figure out what to do with him. Oh, you liked Luke and you thought he was a wise teacher? Nah, throw out that in the window. Now he's shut in and doesn't want to teach anymore. He's lost faith in the Jedi Order.
You wanted Snoke to be somebody really mysterious and powerful, just like. Well, no, he's dead.
He's dead. Ben or Kylo Ren was complicated, you know, like conflicted. You didn't know whether he's gonna go good or go bad. Nah, it just 100% goes bad. And
he's bad.
He's bad. That's he's the villain. Only to throw that out the window in the next movie.
And Rey is perfect. Nothing wrong. No flaws.
Oh no! You guys like the idea of Rey being a nobody, and then she has to learn how to be a Jedi, and she's not the chosen one. Nah, she's the chosen one. She has fucking Palpatine powers.
She has Palpatine's powers, and she's perfect at it. She's the best in the universe at everything that she tries. Everything that she tries, she's the best at it first try. Wow, Rey, you did it. You saved the day because you're the best. And Rey's like, I know.
And then the last movie was at the point where the last movie came out, it was just a collective sigh. Let's get this over with. Like, even me, I went into the theater. I was like, I'm not gonna expect much, but just don't super disappoint me. And at some parts, it went back to the pure, campy, lighthearted Star Wars. You know, it made me feel good. Like the beginning with the light speed jumping, that was fun. That was new. I liked that. I wasn't gonna complain about that. And I thought they killed off Chewie. I was like, oh shit, you know, the last of the old guard. It's finally taking some big boy balls, and you know, they're gonna kill off people. No, it was a fake out. Chewie's not dead. She stabs Kylo Ren. Oh my god! Like the same stab that killed Qui-Gon all those years ago from Darth Maul. Nah, she's got like one of the hardest Jedi Force skills. She could just do it. Heal. What lightsaber wound?
I saw this. I forgot what review I was watching. But it was like one review of it, and he said it was like, this was a really good analogy. It was like the Rise of Skywalker was like J.J. Abrams dumping out all of his Star Wars toys and playing with them. He's like, oh, shoot, I have my Palpatine toy in this one. Well, I guess he's going to be in this story this time. Rey, it's literally like just him playing with toys. And he was like, and it's like last minute. It's the night before he has to show the script to the director. He's like, Oh shit.
So well, what do you got, JJ? He's like, give me 1 second. Turns around in the office room, like back to the director, like he's clearly right in front of him, scribbled on a notepad. Here we go. By God, this is you hate it? I love it. It's so simple.
Mickey Mouse walks in the room. Oh, I love it.
So this work, right away.
It's lots of money. We'll start doing it right away. I know the Star Wars fans are gonna love it.
Fucking George Lucas is in the corner, but I don't know. But it's, huh? What do you know? What, you sold us to us months ago, and that's the last three Star Wars movies. It's just and then hold on, what was that?
He said, "You know Star Wars? What are you talking about? I'm George Lucas." No.
And then every time you bring up. But the expanded universe, you get slapped down. Fucking nerd. Because no one
reads the comic.
Or the books.
Or no one reads the comic. What do you mean? No one reads?
But, oh my god, hold on. We've reached the whole hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this was a long episode. Do we have a what if or a debate quickly?
All right, you okay? I don't know. We talked about Korra the most of the time, so let's continue Korra in or just the Avatar universe, and I don't know, man. I the only thing I can think of is which bending would you? I feel like we've done that one.
I don't think we have actually.
All right, okay, we're gonna do that one. Which bending would you rather do? Would you rather be earthbender, firebender, waterbender, or airbender?
Can we count? So sub, because we also have subsets now.
Yeah, we have subsets. Actually,
what would be, if you had to create a subset of each element, of an element, which one would it be? Because you know how...
That one's good. All right, okay, that one's a good one. Okay.
Because the substance we have, you know, for fire bending, you have the electricity. Earth bending, you have like metal bending and lava bending. And water bending, you really only have like ice. I guess the transformation of the water itself, but.
And blood bending.
Blood bending, yes, blood bending too.
Don't forget about blood bending and healing.
Yes.
With water bending. This is a good one.
For me, like maybe for Earth, you know, easiest one to like do more stuff with would probably be Earth bending. So I'm thinking, like something around the. Gravity is. So the meteorite came down, and that's how Toph did Earth did the metal bending. Could you have enough earthbenders to bend planets out of alignment? Is that a thing?
That's just kind of earthbending at that point.
But that would be space bending, because that it wouldn't be space Earth anymore, bending. Right?
I guess. I'm trying to think of one, because I kind of like have an idea, but I don't know if this just counts as just like water bending. But
what would you say? Like what?
I was going to say this is like kind of like a Bolin thing, because his mom's a firebender and his dad's an earthbender, and so he has lava bending. I was gonna say kind of like this is like an air and water bender, or it's like a tornado bending or something, because that's pretty much what actually, tornadoes are.
So it's storm bending.
Yeah, storm bending or something.
That would be cold.
Like you just create weather.
You create like a rainstorm, like or a tornado, or like a natural like disaster.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That would be cool.
It's that like, would because, be
dope to see, and then all of a sudden you get like lightning and shit, and you're like, "How are they doing this?" That would be cool. That wins. That wins.
Oh yes.
Because you get storm bending. Let's make that happen.
Let's make a new Avatar series.
Well, the next one is the Earthbender.
I know. Ah, oh, dang. Well, actually, no, because they introduced lava bending in Korra, and she was a waterbender, and she was able to. And they,
right.
So,
but think about it. Well, with the next Earth, the next Avatar being an Earthbender, that's really good because you got all these new types of bending in that subsection. That's a goated Avatar. But anyway, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to this not so dietized after all episode of the podcast. As always, you can find us at reup-podcast.com. You can find us on SoundCloud. Just look up the Reup Podcast. Look for our logo. And you, as always, you can find us on Twitter, where I will, as I said before, I will retweet the Cowboy Bebop playoff sequence that they posted because it is really cool and I really enjoyed it. And I'd like to thank everyone for joining us for this episode. We'll see everyone next week.